All glory is the sum of devotees. All glory is the sum of devotees. All glory is the sum of devotees. All glory is to you, Srila Prabhupada. Start with the prayers. Amangana Tamirandasya Gangana Salakaya Chakshu and Militam Lena Tasma Shi Gurave Namaha Shi Chaitanya Namo Vishnam Stapitam Lena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparam Kukam Vandeham Shi Guru Shi Utapatikamam Shi Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Satvachatam Sadhana Ravnatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shiva Krishna Padam Sahagana Ravita Shri Vishakam Vishan Shah He Krishna Kuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Vara Kanta Namastate Sapta Kanchana Gorange Vahe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhani Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Panchakalpa Turibhyascha Kripa Sindhivyevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So today we're reading from the third canto, fourth chapter, verse 34. Chapter as Vidura approaches Maitreya. Deha vyasam chasyavam. Dhiranam mandarya vardhanam. Anisham dushkarataram. Pushanam devatamanam. Deha nyasam tachasyavam. Dhiranam mandarya vardhanam. Anisham dushkarataram. Pushinam vikavatanam. Something like a chant.
Dehanasam chatashayvam.
Dehanasam chatashayvam.
Dhiranam darijavardhanam.
Dhiranam darijavardhanam. Anisham dushkarataram.
Pushunam vikalpavatmanam.
Pushunam vikalpavatmanam. Dehanyasam chitashayvam.
Dhiranam
daryavardhanam.
Anisham
dushkarataram. Pashunam vikavatmanam. Vyavacham natashayvam. Dhiranam dayavadanam. Anisham dushkarataram. Pashunam vikavatmanam. Dehavyasam. Entering the body. Cha, also. Tasya, his. Evam, also. Dhiranam, of great sages. Darya, perseverance. Vardhanam, increasing. Anyesham, for others. Dushkara taram, very difficult to ascertain. Pashunam, of the beasts. Viklava, disturbed. Atmanam, of such a mind. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord's glorious acts and his acceptance of various transcendental forms for the performance of extraordinary pastimes in the mortal world are very difficult for anyone other than his devotees to understand. And for the beast, they are simply a mental disturbance. Please repeat. The Lord's glorious acts and his acceptance of various transcendental forms for the performance of extraordinary pastimes in the mortal world are very difficult for anyone other than his devotees to understand. And for the beasts, they are simply a mental disturbance. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The transcendental forms and pastimes of the Lord, as described in Bhagavad Gita, are difficult subject matters for those who are not devotees to understand. The Lord never reveals himself to persons like the yanis and yogis, and there are others who, because of their envying the Lord from the bottom of their hearts, are classified among the beasts, and for such envious beasts, the subject matter of the Lord's appearance and disappearance is simply a mental disturbance. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:15, the miscreants who are simply concerned with material enjoyment, who work very hard like beasts of burden, can hardly know the personality of Godhead at any stage due to a Surika Bhava, or a spirit of revolt against the Supreme Lord. The transcendental bodily expansions manifested by the Lord for his pastimes in the mortal world and the appearance and disappearance of such transcendental expansions are difficult subject matters, and those who are not devotees are advised not to discuss the Lord's appearance and disappearance, lest they commit further offenses at the lotus feet of the Lord. The more they discuss the transcendental appearance and disappearance of the Lord in the Asuric spirit, the more they enter into the darkest regions of hell, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Anyone who is against the transcendental loving service of the Lord is more or less a beastly creature, as confirmed in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we're very fortunate to be able to be so absorbed in the pastimes of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. It says that there's the book Bhagavat and then there's a person Bhagavat. So the book Bhagavat, and we read Srimad Bhagavatam every day and, you know, discuss the pastimes, and the person Bhagavat, especially for us, is Srila Prabhupada, and it explains that they're equally important, because sometimes, you know, the book may give a certain mood, but then when we actually saw Srila Prabhupada in action, oftentimes he was much, let's say, kinder and more merciful to his devotees. So it's important for us to study those pastimes of Srila Prabhupada as much as we study the Bhagavatam. And it says that the yanis and yogis, that they don't appear to Krishna. He doesn't accept them. But actually, yoginam apisarvesham matkatena antaratmana, that Krishna says that the highest yogi is someone who is rendering transcendental loving service and worshiping him, and that person is the greatest yogi, is the highest of all. So that is the position of Krishna's devotee as being the very, very, very highest yogi. And we're fortunate that every day we're able to see the Lord, you know, dressed by his devotees. There's a prayer that we say, the devotees say every day before they go onto the altar. It goes, you can say it with me if you know it. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Sara Pashante Soyo Deviva Chakshar Atatam Tad Vipraso Vibanyago Jagrivamsaha Sambate Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. And it goes, just as the sun's rays extend to the mundane vision, so in the same way, the wise and learned devotees always see the supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. Because as highly praiseworthy and spiritually awake brahmanas are also able to reveal the spiritual world, they're also able to see that supreme abode of Lord Vishnu. So, you know, we're so fortunate to be able to see Krishna every day. That's not available on every planet. You know, there's hellish planets that are described as being more beautiful than the heavenly planets, but the only thing is that they don't have deities, they don't have devotees. So, you know, we're fortunate to be able to have that and to meditate on Krishna's transcendental form. Prabhupada, there's two prayers that really describe his form. Venum konanta maravinda jalaya taksham barhava tsansam asitam buddha sundarangam kandarpa kutikam ania visheshi shogam govinda mariputisham tamahamajamin. Venum, Krishna playing the flute, and konantam, very, very playful. Krishna's very playful. Actually, there's a little song that when I was teaching Gurukula, we would sing with the Gurukula students to help them, you know, understand what the verses meant. So it goes like this. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, Round his neck hangs a flower garland decorated by a moon locket. His arms are adorned with a flute and jeweled ornaments, and he always revels in past times of love. His graceful form, his graceful form is eternally manifest. So it was nice because it helped them. Help them remember. Forgive me, Pushkar. Anyway, it explains that, you know, just like the rain, when during the very dry season, when it finally rains, everyone's just so joyous, so happy that Prabhupada said that sometimes they'll just go out into the rain, you know, without umbrellas, just so happy that it's coming. And that when Krishna's beauty, when the rain glistens, actually Krishna's beauty also glistens. So many aspects of Krishna's beauty are revealed in his prayers. And also Lola Chandrika Lasadva Namali Vamsi, that's another prayer where Krishna's beauty is completely described. So that's what the Srimad Bhagavatam does to a great extent. It describes the beauty of the Lord, and CC also with Lord Chaitanya's beauty was described with the lotus eyes and the mind-attracting smile and his long limbs and his golden form, that when Lord Chaitanya appeared in different places, people were stunned, along with Krishna, but just by his beauty, and many people were transformed just by looking at Lord Chaitanya, more so Lord Chaitanya even than Lord Krishna, because they described it, sometimes people would see Krishna and not really know who he was, but even though they didn't know who Lord Chaitanya was, they were just, again, they were stunned by, you know, by his beauty. Many Mayavadi, you know, prominent philosophers, they were just drawn by that, drawn by his beauty. And of course, devotees also are very beautiful because they have loving hearts, they have purified hearts. And, you know, people who come to the temple, I remember one person in particular looking at the children and saying, "I've never seen more beautiful children than you have here." So, you know, as we uncover, even that we may be older, whatever, as we uncover and purify our hearts, it makes it, it shines. You know, that every soul is brighter than a million suns. And so you can imagine looking at each other right now, not quite brighter than a million suns, but definitely bright. So we're on the path to, you know, to working towards that. Srila Prabhupada makes the comment, you know, there's so many Shruti falls in the Bhagavatam, you know, just by hearing Bhagavatam every day, the prayer that says, just by hearing and attending and chanting the Bhagavatam every day, that all that is inauspicious in the heart is removed, and that pure devotional service, it will be established as an irrevocable fact. So that's why it's so important, you know, and it's so nice to see so many the people that are here, you know, to hear Bhagavatam, because it really makes a difference. You know, as I saw, you know, the lack of attendance here, I thought, I'm just going to have to make more of an effort, because I usually listen to class at home too. But it's so nice to be able, when you give class, to give to an audience, you know, where there can be some reciprocation. And here in the verse, Prabhupada's talking about the pastimes of the Lord. So at the end of the class, I'd like to just everybody to think a little bit about a pastime that really means something to them, that means a lot to them, and why it means a lot to them, and maybe what they learn from it. Because these pastimes, they just become really part of our lives, part of our thought process. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it explains that the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's so many Shruti falls just from hearing the Bhagavatam, that just by hearing the story of Lord Varaha, there's healing. Someone's sick and they hear that pastime, it can help them to heal. And hearing about Dhruva Maharaj, that can give someone fame, and explain that the pastime of the Shaman Tucker Jewel, that someone who has a bad reputation, just by hearing or reading that story, that it could take away that bad reputation and give him a fresh start. So every material problem and every psychological problem can be solved just by reading the Bhagavatam. It's hard for us to understand that because, you know, also in the Bhagavad Gita explains Namam Dushkritina Mudha Papajante Nratama Mayaya Patagagyana Asuram Bhavam Ashrita, that there's four kinds of men that don't surrender to Krishna. And those four kinds of men are the grossly foolish, the lowest among mankind, those whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and those who partake of the atheistic nature of demons. So, you know, just like the mudha, someone, Prabhupada compares it to a donkey. You know, and the donkey, he works so hard, and what does he get for his result? He gets a little bit of grass, but there's plenty of grass there. He wouldn't have to work so hard, but that's just his fate. So Prabhupada explains that people, you know, they work so hard for a big bank balance, you know, or just to be able to survive, not even a big bank balance, but the whole idea is that fruit of activity, it can only go so far, whereas reading Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing it every day, and chanting the prayers, that's actually bringing much more good fortune, much more, because with love of God, everything comes. There's nothing lacking. Everything is included in that love of God. Prabhupada says every material problem, every psychological problem, you name it, it can be cured by the Bhagavatam. So again, we're so fortunate to be a part of that. The demons, of course, they're not interested in hearing the pastimes of the Lord. In fact, Prabhupada said that, you know, you have to be careful with even explaining things to them because of their offenses. For example, you know, Lord Varaha, or Lord Nisringadev, or, you know, Kurma, the tortoise incarnation, all these, very hard for people who aren't devotees to understand, like, this is God, he's a big hog, and he's, you know, got the earth on his tusk, and like, you know, sure, all right, I don't get it, I don't believe it. But for devotees, of course, it's very easy to accept anything that Prabhupada told us, first of all. You know, for us, you know, when Prabhupada spoke, we knew it was the truth. So Prabhupada explains that these demons, that life after life, they're thrown into demonic species. So in the purport, there's a question like, well, does that mean that if that's what Krishna does, is he not so merciful? Because they're just thrust lifetime after lifetime. But I was listening to a lecture by Pralladananda, and he was saying, no, they're giving those bodies of, you know, cats and dogs. Okay, so we're making an exception of, you know, Shivananda Sain's dog and Nimai's puppy and dogs and cats and other animals that have been adopted by devotees, because those are very special cases, those animals. But generally, animals, they're in that position because they don't want to hear about Krishna. They don't want to hear about the Supreme Person of Godhead. So it's a perfect place for them. They won't have to worry about hearing something that's going to agitate them. On the other hand, Chaturvidha Bhajanti Mam, Namas Sukritino, help me, Pushkar. Just can't quote the whole verse. Yeah. Artashiva. So there's four kinds of men that surrender to Krishna. And that's the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and those who are searching after the absolute. So, you know, for most of us, it was a combination of things. First of all, when you don't know the absolute truth, then you're distressed. That just comes with distress. And then also, you're inquisitive. You're wanting to know the truth. So many of us, we were searching for the absolute truth, and we wanted to know, well, gosh, what's life for? You know, many of us, We grew up after the World War II. For many people who went through that war, all they were interested in really was Dharma, you know, religion, and they were interested in economic development because they'd gone through the Depression and they didn't have much. They didn't have much money. So, and a certain amount of sense gratification. That was their goal, to be able to, you know, have some amount of peace. But for those who came after, the next generation, they were born into a more peaceful situation, and they had pretty much economic stability, but not satisfied with that. Still distressed, as it explains. And so they're looking for more, and many became very absorbed in sense gratification, and finding that was also not very satisfying, looked for something more. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, he came because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta told him, if you have money, print books. And when you print the books, go to the West, because they're going to be ready. They're going to be ready for you, because, you know, the pure devotee has that vision of past, present, and future, and he can see what can happen. And of course, you know, there's a story of Srila Prabhupada where he's in a big assembly where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is speaking of, you know, in the future there's going to be someone who's able to change the world. And well, some of the devotees were looking at him and saw that he was looking exactly at Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada came over, luckily, and was able to galvanize all these lost souls who were really looking for the absolute truth. And of course, this is all still going on, you know, that devotees, you know, they're able to take the risk. They're able to take the risk of preaching to people who may not be very interested in hearing the message, but they go out on Harinam, they go out on book distribution every day. There's a group of devotees who are very dedicated to going out in Harinam every week on University Avenue and 441. You know, Parijata, she always makes prasadam every week. Has a little basket. Mamohini goes. Vrindavan Leela, Narada, Nagarj is always there. Nitya and Keshava. So it's an opportunity, even though it may not seem like much. The Hare Krishna mantra is so powerful that it travels all over. Prabhupada said it travels around the world 6-7 times, purifying everything in its path. And in the CC, it explained that even the inanimate living entities are having kirtan. So kirtan is going on, things are changing, and we see how, like in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna is driving Krishna, he's nimittamatram, he's become Krishna's instrument. And so Arjuna got the credit. You know, Krishna was very generous, you know, giving credit to Arjuna for, you know, fighting in the war and winning the war. And Lord Prabhupada explains in the CC that Lord Chaitanya is like that. That he's giving the credit, and Srila Prabhupada is giving the credit to his devotees who are very, very dedicated to pressing on this process, you know, continuing this process and making sure that it goes on. So, you know, we see the book distributors, the Harinamers, and everyone even at the temple, they're very dedicated. They're and the youth we see that are becoming more involved. It's very encouraging to see them, to see this movement continue, because it's going to continue for the next, you know, so many hundreds, thousands of years. So we're off to a good start. It's also beautiful to see, you know, this loving devotion that's developed between devotees. I was recently reading Krishna Janani by Shiva Rama Maharaj, and it was talking about, you know, the whole pastime of Krishna being tied up. And so he resisted so much. In fact, at one point it said that, and this is very well noted, that where it came from, you know, from Vishnu Chakravarti and Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, where these details came from. So it explains that Krishna, he didn't want to be tied up, and so he thought, well, wait a minute, I can just make myself as tiny as tinier than the atom, and she won't even be able to see me. She won't even be able to tie me up. But because her mother showed his love, he wasn't able to do that. So the pastime went on, and it's pretty amazing when you hear all the little details of Krishna's friends coming and trying to help him get away and bringing him food and, you know, just trying to entertain him. And it actually was, as they're trying to entertain him, Krishna, that's when he decides to start moving. And he starts moving a little bit, and all the cowherd boys, they're like cheering, yay, yay, go, go, Krishna, go. So then Krishna is able to, you know, break through, and the Arjuna trees fall down, and the demigods come out, and, you know, it's pretty ecstatic. And after the whole pastime goes on, then Krishna's mad. You know, he's feigning this anger that how could Mother Yashoda do this to him? How could he tie him up? How humiliating was that for him? And again, the cowherd boys are kind of egging him on. So he decides he's not going to even talk to Mother Yashoda anymore. And he goes to Nanda Maharaj, and Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda is the prime object, you know, of Krishna's love, but also Nanda Maharaj. But so Krishna's crying, he's explaining to Nanda Maharaj what she did, and Nanda Maharaj is sympathizing with them, but he's saying, but still, she's your mother. She didn't mean anything by it. She was doing it, you know, she was doing it for your own well-being. And Krishna's like, no, I'm not gonna speak to her again. He says, but what about, you know, aren't you like, when you get hungry, aren't you gonna wanna go drink some milk? And he's like, no, I'm a big boy now, and I'm just gonna go drink it straight, I'll drink the milk straight from the cows like a lot of the other boys. And so Nanda Maharaj is becoming a little concerned that Krishna is taking this kind of an attitude and trying to convince him to go see Mother Yashoda. So Nanda Maharaj has another idea. He says, well, you know what, Krishna, you're right. You're right. Mother Yashoda, that was terrible that she did that. And I think anybody that does something like that, they really deserve to be beaten. She should just be beaten and given just the worst punishment. And that startled Krishna out of his mood of enmity towards Mother. She says, no, never, you know. He goes, no, I think that's what we're going to do. So then Krishna was like, please, where's Mother Yashoda? He goes running towards her, and he's knocking on the door. Mother Yashoda, mother, please let me in. And she lets him in. They have a wonderful reunion and, you know, living happily ever after. But I just thought it was beautiful how, you know, these different relationships that the devotees have with each other, and how they bring out more and more love, because definitely it brought a lot of love out of Nanda Maharaj, because when he was holding Krishna was explaining, he had tears just flowing out of his eyes, and Mother Yashoda was, she was so much in distress that she was beside herself. But somehow this all heightened the pastime as many times it works this way. So that's what devotees are trying to do. They're trying to develop this kind of love, even with each other. You know, even we may have some difficulties. You know, oftentimes devotees have difficulties with each other, and I'm not no exception. You know, I had some difficulties. It took me over a year to really get over. I'm not proud of it, but Krishna did help me get over it. So when we have, you know, inimical feelings towards devotees, we have to practice forgiveness and tolerance and just pray, you know, to really understand how rare a devotee is. Out of many thousand among men, one may endeavor for perfection, or those who achieve perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So very, very, very exceptional. Radhika Raman told me a story recently about this devotees in Tirupati, and they had a book table. So this old man came up, and he took a Bhagavad Gita, he looked at it, And he started crying. He had tears pouring out of his eyes, and he was actually trembling, holding the Bhagavad Gita. So the devotee was like, "Are you okay? Like, what's going on here? You know, you love the Bhagavad Gita. That's great." And the old man said, "Well, what happened?" He goes, "I was dying, and the Yamadutas came to get me, and it's hard to believe the story, but." He totally verified it, Radhika Raman, with the authorities that and the people that heard the pastime and the man who told the pastime. So he said the Yamadutas had come to get him, and Yamaraj came and said, "You've got the wrong man. It's the same name. It's even the same town, but it's the wrong person." And so he was so relieved, but then Yamar said to him, "If you really want to know what to do," he said, "get a Bhagavad Gita as it is." So this older man was looking for a Bhagavad Gita, and here he found one from the devotee book table, Bhagavad Gita as it is. So he felt like he'd already seen the Yamadutas, right? He'd already seen the Yamadutas and Yamaraj, so he was very, very relieved to be able to have that, that opportunity to be saved. These pastimes of the Lord that we can become so absorbed in. I know lately I've been reading the story of Madhavendra Puri, and what a great devotee that he is, and how, with the sweet rice, when he heard about the sweet rice, he was thinking, "I just want to be able to taste it so I'll know how to make it for my deities." But he wasn't really making an offense, but he felt like it was an offense. So he immediately went away. And he was repenting a lot for what he'd done. But the deity, because he understood Madhavendra Puri's heart and what his real intention was, he took a pot of sweet rice and he hid it. He's very famous for being Kishore Gopinath, the one who stole the pot of sweet rice and hid it. And then the pujari had a dream that's what happened. And he went and found the pot of sweet rice, and he went out to the marketplace and he called, "Madhavendra, Madhavendra." Madhavendra didn't... He said, "I have a pot of sweet rice for you. You're the most fortunate person in the world because Gopinath has saved this pot of sweet rice for you." And so he was very reluctant because he didn't want to become famous. Oftentimes when devotees become famous, it can kind of take away some of their devotional feeling if they become attached to that kind of fame. So Madhavendra Puri was very glorified for that. And the other story that I've been reading is the story of Sakshi Gopal, which again is the intimate story of the relationship between the devotee and the deity. And we're fortunate to be able to see the deities every day. And like Mother Mukhi was reading some of the New Year's resolutions that devotees have, that have made, and they're asking the Lord, very, very personal, asking the Lord to please help them with that. So that kind of personal relationship is the beginning of our relationship, our eternal relationship with Krishna. So in the story of Sakshi Gopal, with the young Brahmana and the older Brahmana that are traveling on pilgrimage, and the young Brahmana is helping the older man, not looking for any kind of reward. He just knew it was something important. Because in Vedic culture, helping older people was just part of the culture. And so many blessings were bestowed upon those who followed that. And we can see in our present day culture here in America, and even in India, now they're opening nursing homes where they can just put their older parents and not have to be troubled by taking care of them. Because they don't really understand all the... They're thinking that any kind of material reward is a result of their action. Is a result of their action. Not that it's a blessing from Krishna, but it's their work. That's the mudha mentality. So in this story, they travel, and the young man is very helpful to the older man. So at the end of the story, as you know, the young man, he offers his daughter in charity to the older man, offers the young man his daughter in charity. The young man says, no, please don't do that, because also in Vedic culture, it wasn't proper to offer the daughter to a lower family, you know, to a different caste. And this young man says that, no, I don't think you should do that. It's not a good idea, you know. But the older man insists, no, because your family isn't going to be happy about it. They're going to be upset if you decide to do this. He's like, no, it's my decision. I'm making the decision. So he makes the decision, and they both go back to their homes. And the older man, he gets pretty nervous before he has to tell his family. But when he tells his family, they're outraged. They're like, what? You did what? No way. What's wrong with you? We're going to leave you, and we're never going to speak to you again. So they said, well, he says, well, I don't know what to do, because I made this promise. I made this promise to the Lord, to Shakshi Gopal. They're like, well, just say that you forgot. So that's what he does. He said, I just forgot. And the younger Brahmana, not because he's so attached that he wants this daughter in charity. That's not his motive. He doesn't want the older Brahmana to make offense against the Lord. So he goes to Shakshi Gopal and he says, look, this is what happened. He offered his daughter in charity. His family went against it. Now we won't do it. And so you've got to help me. You've got to come with me. And Shakshi Gopal's like, no. He goes, I can't. I'm Didi. You know, I can't walk. He said, you know, everybody knows what he said. If you can talk, you can walk. Yeah. So then they start the journey. They start the journey, you know, over the hills and the valleys and the dales. And the only condition, you know, he feeds a deity every day, but the condition is that he can't turn around. As soon as he turns around, then the deity will stay. So on the long trip, he can always hear the ankle bells of the deity. And they get very, very close to the village, and he can't hear him anymore. So he's thinking, oh no, what if he's not there anymore? And I've gone all this trouble. So he stops, he turns around, there's Shakshi Gopal, but he's not going to move anymore. But he goes and tells all the village people. The village people come out. And then, of course, there's a big festival. There's many, many festivals, a great wedding festival. And Shakshi Gopal is installed, and all the devotees. So when you think about these pastimes, every pastime is an exchange of love. And it's meant to, even when we do Govardhan Puja, it's an exchange of love. Like you saw the hill that Gandharvika orchestrated. You know, everything she did to make it wonderful, you know, the lights and the figures, you know, and the prasadam, and Manmohini put on such a wonderful play. It was amazing, going through lots of trouble to, you know, do the practices. But again, it was a loving effort, you know, to be able to display and share this pastime with the devotees. So we are involved in this. These pastimes of love, and Krishna is always calling upon us to come to the highest level. You know, for devotees, there's one story of Narada Muni, and Narada Muni, he goes to see Krishna. So when he comes back, there's a cobbler and there's a brahmana. So the brahmana says, "Oh, you went to see my lord. What was he doing?" And so Narada Muni says, "Well, he was trying to thread a camel through the eye of a needle." The Brahmana's like, what the? That's crazy. That's, never mind. You know, that couldn't happen. So then the cobbler later comes to Narada Muni and says, my lord, what was he doing? Narada Muni says, well, he's threading a camel through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler, you know, the poor, quote-unquote, unintelligent cobbler said, oh, my lord, so wonderful. He's able to do anything. So that's our position. I was listening to a pastime of Prahlada Nanda Maharaj with Vishnu John, and they were in Houston, in kind of a, you know, redneckish kind of an area, and they were, you know, in their dhotis, and he said it was even before the word cult came about. You know, they didn't even have the status of being a cult yet. They were just like these three. It was Vishajan and Pallada Maharaj and one other devotee. I forgot his name. And so they were, you know, dancing, chanting, distributing books. So to everybody, they just looked weird, you know, just very weird people. So they were arrested, and they were put in jail. And when it came time for court, Vishajan Swami, they were asking him different questions. And while they were asking the questions, one man came up to another man and said, you know, if you go up there and hit him, I'm going to give you a bunch of money. So the man didn't say anything. But as this court case was going on, he was actually a newspaper reporter, and he raised his hand and said, you know what? He said, this man here offered me so much money if I would go up and attack, you know, Vishajan Maharaj. He said, but I wouldn't do it. And Pralada Maharaj said, the amazing thing was that once that happened, that it totally changed the attitude of the court, and that from that time on, they became more positive, and they ended up allowing them to go ahead and dance in the street and distribute books. So you never know what the outcome of a difficult situation can be. You know, so many times we see in the Bhagavatam where devotees are going through difficulties, but we see how Queen Kunti reacted. She reacted, you know. Let these troubles come again and again, because I know by them coming again and again that I'll be able to remember you. There's another story with Vishajan Maharaj and a Sankirtan party, and they're traveling, and they're going to New Vrindavan for a big festival for Janmashtami. But right before they get there, you know, they're distributing books as they go along, they all get arrested. So they're in the jail, and they're bummed out, you know, because they're supposed to be at Janmashtami, and here they are in jail. But Vishajan says, you know what? We'll just have our own Janmashtami right here. You know, you two string garlands, you guys make chapatis, you know, you can chant, you know, bhajans. And so that's what they did. They just started, you know. Can you imagine, like, you know, they're picking flowers, they're, you know, making garlands, they're, you know, mixing chapati dough, and they're rolling chapatis, cooking it on the stove, and the people outside the jail are just looking like, whoa, what is going on here? They actually get scared. So they say, we're going to let you guys out, and you just better get out of here, you better, like, leave town, and we don't want to see you again. So they were able to get out and go to New Vrindavan and celebrate Janmashtami. I think that was the first Janmashtami I ever went to. It was my first festival in New Vrindavan. It must have been 1974. And I couldn't, there was so much, you know, so much milk from their cows and gulab jamuns, and I'd never had a feast like that. I went with Mukhya and Brajendra, her husband, and it was the ecstatic beginning of a wonderful life of devotional service, I have to say. So, again, these pastimes of the Lord, they're always going on. They're going on in the past, and they're going on here. And there's so much to do that Krishna can do himself, or Srila Prabhupada could orchestrate, but he's giving us the opportunity to actually do that ourselves. So now I'd just like to open up for any questions or comments or reflections or sharing a pastime that a loving pastime that means something to you. And yes, is there a microphone? Thank you for such an incredible class. Thank you, Prashad, for being here.
I have a similar story in Sankirtan in my early days. You know, we used to distribute at the airport in New York, and I had a big Krishna book came out, and we had a specific place we could work, you know, But like devotees, you know, we try to wander off and try if it wasn't busy.
Right.
So I went downstairs. No, I was upstairs where the people were all coming in from a trip. You know, their plane landed. So I thought I'd get them, you know, as they get before they go all over the airport. So I knew I wasn't supposed to be there, so I was a little nervous. So anyhow, I was passing these books out, and suddenly this man came, and he had a face like, you know, scared to death. And I had the books in my hand, you know, and Prabhupada's picture was at the back of the book. So he started screaming. I thought, oh my God, this guy's going to have a heart attack. They're going to find me here, and I'm going to get put in jail. So I started running, and he was running behind me. And I said, and I said, oh, please don't have a heart attack, please. So I was trying to run behind people so he wouldn't see me. And he was older man, white hair, white skin. And he was just chasing me. So I ran downstairs, and he was just running, and he was just making this terrible song, and I was scared to death. And I thought, so I stopped, and I said, sir, what is your problem? And he said, and he's pointing to Prabhupada. And I said, you know him? You know Prabhupada? And he said, you won't believe what happened to me. He said, I was dying, and these people came, they're terrible people, terrible, horrible Yamadutas, and they were pulling me. And this man here, he came and he said like this, and he stopped them, and he turned and looked at me, and he said, I've been looking for that man, you know, for forever.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh. Like,
and he said, please, who is he? And even when I think of that experience, I couldn't believe it. So, of course, I told him who Prabhupada was, and I gave him a book. He wanted every book. He wanted to know where he could meet him. Prabhupada already left. He was in the early 80s. And he said, oh, well, where can I learn about him? And, of course, you know, good preaching opportunity. I told him, he was from Germany, and I told him we had a center, and he took practically every book I had in my hand. So it was amazing, you know, and he said he never met Prabhupada. Prabhupada saved him, so something in his previous life, whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but definitely, he said, I was looking for him. I've been looking all over. So when he saw me, he saw Prabhupada, he wanted a book. I thought he was chasing me, but, you know, people do have experience like that.
That's a pretty amazing story.
Yeah.
Thank you for
that. Amazing, yeah. Still remember that one of the most outstanding things in my Sankatan experience. And my faith in Prabhupada really increased it, you know. Thinking, my God, he's all over the world. People have never heard of him. He's looking for him, you know. So we have to get out there and do this, get the books out.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you for your class.
Thank you.
I appreciate the point that you made about the generations of World War II generation, and then afterwards they were different. They weren't so have to be concerned so much with economic development and all those things, and so they were like searching for something else. And then how amazing is it that I was thinking how like these exalted souls, Krishna and these exalted like souls, ambassadors, like they know exactly what's going on in the world. Like they're like contemporary. They're not just like 500 years ago, you know, just the six Goswamis or what you're talking. It's like it's all happening like in a contemporary way. Like there was a need for these, you know, like the hippie generation. They were sort of like ripe mangoes, even though they were very like degraded. And then this, you know, gentleman from like Bengal comes and he like gives them what they're looking for. It's just so like, it's like very modern, and like they know what's going on in the world at the current moment, and they know like what the world needs. It's not just like some ancient, you know, scripture. It's very like today's world. They know what's going on.
It's to really be here now. Thank you.
It's not a question, it's more like a comment. When before I retired, I was working in a national park, and on rainy days, only the Indian people would come. And I was always wondering, what do they like about the rain? because most of the people, they associate, you know, rain to, oh, we won't be able to gratify our senses. But the Indians had that vision, like you say, for them it's auspicious, you know, because they associate this to rainfall after dry season and uplands and all that. So I just wanted to say that, that they were the one coming on rainy days.
Thank you.
I really like that story of Vishnujan Swami. We may not be, every situation may not be grateful, like in the prison, but we can remain grateful and celebrate in relation to Krishna. So I never heard that, but it was very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, it's a classic.
He was grateful, he was celebrating Janmashtami.
Yeah, because even when
the jail.
Even when Prabhupada heard that, Palananda was mentioning this, that devotees would get arrested. I know, I mean, I got arrested so many times that when I went to work at the charter school and they saw my record, how many times I was arrested, they were like, what is this about? And I said, well, you know, because I knew we were Hare Krishnas, or Hare Krishna, I distributed books, I'd get arrested. When Prabhupada heard that, he said, that's okay, just go, you know, the devotees are getting arrested all the time. He said, that's okay, just continue, so... That was an amazing story, though.
Being a good example, too.
What?
You yourself being a good example of that, that remain grateful in every situation.
Yeah.
Situation may not be grateful, but you remain. You maintain that. So nice.
Krishna's mercy, right? When we can always we can have such faith in the Lord, just like Prahlad, right? Everything that was going on, his faith was steady on Krishna. And that's not easy to do that, you know. And sometimes big things are easier than little things. Little things that just gnaw away at you every day, you know. Maybe a relationship issue or, you know, somebody's harassing you in some way. It's harder sometimes than something that's big. But again, you know, you just remain fixed on who we want to be and where we're going. It's very helpful. I'm sorry, Prue, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So... One, you're asking about different pastimes that would be very inspiring. Well, in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Mahaprabhu, in great ecstasy, he recited one verse, Prithviyachayutayata nagadadigram svachapachahoyvimornam, that he gave the prophecy that the holy name, and holy name here didn't mean just the recitation of the letters of the holy name, it meant the entire conception of bhakti would spread to every town and village. So one of the most amazing and inspiring pastimes for everyone is that we saw the persona of the fulfillment of that prophecy.
How do you know?
You understand? You saw it, that you saw Srila Prabhupada, so forth, so on. So you saw the manifestation of that prophecy come true. So that's the most inspiring thing. And just one other little caveat, I was listening to class yesterday online, and there was a question about Shukdev Goswami. So I'm just giving the references because I don't think I'll take so much time to explain. But the references for Shukadeva Goswami, having heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Mahadev and flew into the mouth of the wife of Vyasadev, is in Skanda Purana, Brahma Vaivart Purana, and in the Moksha Parva, which is one section of Mahabharata. Then also the reference for how he is the parent of Radhika is there in Ananda Vrindavan Champu, of Srila Kavi Karnapur. Also, in Srimad Bhagavatam itself, the statement Sri Shukla Uvacha has been translated by many very stalwart devotees as Sriya Shukla Uvacha, means the parrot of Radhika. Also, it's mentioned Radha Nama Pracharena Mochita Sanmasiko Bhavet, that if Shukdev Goswami had even mentioned the name of Radhika, he would faint for 6 months. This would be impossible unless he had relationship with Srimati Radhika. Understand? He's able to mention the name of Krishna unlimitedly in Bhagavatam, but he could not even mention the name directly. So many things. But
they say that those references are not authentic. There's no exact. People are talking about. There's no exact reference. We are saying Skanda Purana. Skanda Purana is the biggest Purana.
Yes.
is correct. Yes. That he has the Prajabashi mood, the Krishna state. Mm-hmm. But exactly where it, there is no exact reference. Ananda Vrindavan Chukra does not have. Some people really be such.
Yeah, I think Ananda Vrindavan Chukra just gave the idea.
No, but there is no exact record that is it where.
Mm-hmm.
It's been said, but it's not proven.
That's why they, because they gave the analysis that praman can be of many kinds. So shabda is the main praman. But inference, anuman, arshan, and sadhuvakya, all are considered also. But after we're talking, there's a different topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise it's floating all over the internet.
Yeah.
We need to have a solid evidence before we say. But you can say it says in Mahabharata, where?
It's in the Shantipada, the third section of Shantipada, 174 to the end, it's called Moksha Pada. The story of the plan of Bhakti Giti was there. Do you have anything after this time?
There might. No, you don't even know. Prabhupada gave a beautiful, solid evidence when he says, monist. But then, like for example, in a letter to Madhusudan Prabhu, it's in the Vedas.
I have the evidence right here. Prabhupada writes that, yes, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was a monist at one point in life. And Prabhupada said, yes, just like Lord Buddha preached voidism, even though he's the incarnation of Vishnu. So Prabhupada gave a very good reference that he agreed that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a monist one time in his early life. Then Krishna has a purpose why he went from monist to Bhadraloka. Bhadraloka means like a high-class intelligent Indians in British time. So he became, there was no sign of devotee yet. But then he took the whole bunch of educated Indians to this Brahma Samaj, then to the impersonalism. And then when he adopted Gaudiya, they followed him. So to curb them, Krishna arranged that. And it's very nice, beautiful letter. The whole letter Prabhupada wrote to Madhusudan Prabhu to understand that. So we understand, okay, it's understood like that. But with the Sukhdev Goswami, not everything so clear. It is understood that way, we accept this, but when you put together, it's not so clear yet.
Yeah, I don't know this whole line of reasoning, but it's a valid argument to say, you know, it's inferred here, it's inferred here, and these differences are recognized by the sadhus and the acharyas. There's your argument. That's an argument. I mean, if some... I mean, even having it in black and white, it's not going to be black and white because someone's heart's not open to it. So, I mean, it is an argument, it has its relative value, but the arguments alone aren't
it's
really...
It's not an argument by non-devotees.
Well,
that's
fine. You have an argument, it's inferred by this and that acharya, and la-di-da, let's go on and chant Hare Krishna and get some picture. I mean, how far are you going to be into that?
Good idea, let's stop.
Thank you.
I forgot my favorite verse though. Machita Makata Prana.